From Vancouver, we present Episode 3 of The Kraken Wakes, a serial adapted by Eric Cameron from the novel by John Wyndham. The Kraken Wakes, Episode 3. There are no doubts now in the minds of officials and scientists. For several years, an unidentified force from another planet has been establishing itself in the deepest parts of the world's oceans. So far, no means have been found to control the invasion. After the mysterious fireballs from outer space plunged by the hundreds into the oceans, attempts were made to locate and identify the submarine invaders. When they destroyed diving chambers and dozens of ships, we retaliated with special atomic bombs. As ships continued to disappear, many people believed that the sinkings were part of a communist scheme to weaken the morale and resistance of the Western countries. When a large Japanese passenger liner sank suddenly, the official explanation was metal fatigue that caused the ship's hull to break up. Then the famous Queen Anne, the world's largest passenger vessel, vanished with thousands of people. This latest catastrophe has been stirring up a storm of speculation. Mike and Phyllis Watson are covering the story for the English Broadcasting Company.
Hello? Oh, one moment, please. Mike?
Yeah.
Mike, wake up. Long distance for you.
What, at this ungodly hour?
It's none other than the EBC's director of talks, dear old Freddy Whittier.
Hello? Hello?
I'm afraid you might be out, Mike.
At 5 a.m.
You've heard the news about the Queen Anne sinking.
Yes, of course.
We want something from you on this deep-sea menace.
The last thing I was told was to lay off any hint
of... This disaster's changed all that. Don't be too sensational, of course. Be convincing. Make them believe there is something down on the sea bottom.
What's the reason for doing it now, Freddy?
There's a rumor running wild here that the Russians sank the Queen Anne. You know how it is when people get emotionally worked up. And if it isn't stopped, there might be serious trouble for the government.
Well, that kind of rumor's easier to start than stop.
Stopped it's got to be. Metal fatigue isn't good enough this time, so the line is to be the deep sea menace. Tomorrow's papers are using it. The Admiralty is willing to play, and we've got several big scientific names already.
Well, that should help some.
There's more. The BBC's next bulletin and ours will have strong hints to start the ball rolling. The big American networks have started already.
Okay, Freddy, I'll get cracking right away. A half-hour feature. What angle?
Serious, but not blood-curdling. Not too technical. Intelligent man-in-the-street stuff. Communicate cautious but confident optimism.
Well, I'll do my best. And I'll telephone as soon as Phyllis and I have been able to put something together. Darling, where did you put the atlas?
It's under that pile of newspaper clippings on the floor. You know, Mike, I've been thinking that the first thing people are going to ask is, if this menace is so serious, why has nothing been done?
Well, that needn't be too difficult to handle. We can use the unpreparedness angle as a diversionary challenge. The brains of the world getting together and turning the full force of modern science on the job of avenging human lives and ships and preventing any more. Carry on while I ransack the piles. Fast, darling. That's the fourth gin and lime you've knocked back in 3 hours.
Well, haven't we earned the right to relax a bit?
You're liable to relax so much I'll have to carry you out of the pump.
Well, it's a lovely way to research the results of a propaganda project. Do you think the newspaper stories and broadcasts about the deep sea menace have done the trick?
Well, our survey has been limited to the pubs in Falmouth, but I'd say the rumor of the Russians being responsible for sinking the Queen Anne was fading fast. I little doubt it would have swept the field if the papers the next morning hadn't pinned the responsibility on the things down below.
Is the fact likely to be fully accepted?
With so many prominent people taking a serious view of the situation, it's not as easy to scoff at now.
Mm. Why so quiet all of a sudden?
News time.
Derek Cook, bringing you the English Broadcasting Company's 11 o'clock edition of news from at home and around the world. The General Assembly of the United Nations today discussed the global problem presented by the occupation of many deep sea areas by as yet unidentified alien forces. The President of the Assembly asked all member nations to treat the situation with the utmost gravity. He stated that with strength, determination, and universal cooperation... Stand by, please. The regular news broadcast will continue in a moment following this special bulletin. Two more ships are reported sunk. The new British aircraft carrier Meritorious and the American luxury cruise ship Carib Princess. The Meritorious went down in mid-Atlantic, 800 miles southwest of the Cape Verde Islands, the Carib Princess in the area of the Puerto Rico Trench. Both ships sank in a matter of 2 or 3 minutes, and from each, very few survived. The EBC will interrupt regular programming as new information becomes available. And now we return to the regular news items prepared for this broadcast.
Two in one day.
Oh, it's like a horrible nightmare.
It's likely to get worse before it gets better. Let's take stock of people's reactions.
Yes.
All right, Jack. Say there are these wopsits at the bottom of the sea. Then what A want to know is why we're not getting after them right away. We've got atom bombs and hydrogen bombs and who knows what other kinds, haven't we? Well, why don't we go out to bomb them to hell?
Okay, Ted. But if you go and bomb them to
hell,
you know
what... kept on talking about the deeps. Then why don't we get cracking and suck the deeps good and hard?
I'll tell you why, chum. It's because the old thing's a lot of bloody eyewash.
What do you mean? AWOSH.
Things in the bloody deeps. Horse marines and bloody Martians. Now look, tell me this. We lose ships. The Yanks lose ships. The Jets lose ships.
All right.
But do the Russians lose ships? Do they, hell? And I'd like to know why not.
The Russians did lose a ship.
When was that, Mom?
Oh, the way back at the time when the American cruiser sank off the Marianas. A Russian ship went down eastward of the Kuril.
Lady, you've got a fantastic memory, all right.
She works for the news clipping service.
Oh.
That kind of work sharpens one's memory for details.
All right. So she read it in a newspaper years back. That's just the kind of camouflage you could expect from the commies.
No, Jack. If it was the Russians, the Yanks would have pressed the button before now.
Oh.
Moscow would be nothing but a big hole in the ground.
My kids will think I'm off my bloody rocker if I let on I believe this creepy crawlies on the sea bottom planning to take over the world from us. What next?
Ah, you've got to plan for it, like anything else, I suppose. But I must say it'd make me feel easier to know somebody was really doing something about it.
That's the bloody trouble with our government. Nobody tries to do anything till it's too bloody late.
The matter is this, Mike. I've had on good authority, though strictly off the record, that the Americans decided to depth-bomb the trench at the point where the Carib Princess vanished, primarily as a gesture in response to public opinion. They don't think it'll do a bit of good, but they have to make a show of some sort.
The project certainly has been well publicized.
Yes, it has, Phyllis. American citizens now feel proud that their forces are taking a lead in reprisals. The British seem to have decided to applaud the occasion as a gesture of reproof to their own leaders.
Why couldn't you have let Phil and me do some of the on-scene reportage, Freddy?
Oh, why waste your time and experience on some fruitless gesture designed for publicity purposes? We can sit right here in the studio and listen to Derek doing his bit for dear old EBC. He's been nagging me for nearly a year to let him have a roving assignment.
Well, you'll find it a lot less cut and dried than rattling off newscasts.
Well, I hope you remember to carry some pills for seasickness.
Well, let's see how the shortwave pickup is behaving now. Could you give us the feed, please?
A truly beautiful day here, with the sea sparkling like diamonds.
Oh, sure.
Every now and then, schools of flying fish burst from the waves and glide over the water like jeweled insects. The flotilla of 10 ships commissioned for this important task set out from Chesapeake Bay amid a tremendous send-off. Admiral Rockwell Hagen, known in the United States Navy as Old Rock Bottom, confidently expects the mission to be a success. Amid the general acclamation for the Armada, the voice of Cuba has been heard protesting at the prospect of atomic bombs on her doorstep. Stand by, please.
Derek seems to be enjoying himself.
The flagship has just signaled battle station.
Oh, here we go.
You can feel a wave of tension sweeping over the entire ship now. Stand by. We're only a short distance now from the target area. In fact, at this moment, the flotilla is over the Canaan Trench, a huge trough-like depression in the sea bottom. The ships are reducing speed now. The moment is approaching. In addition to two atomic bombs, the expedition's armed with a number of high-explosive bombs designed for great depth. I've been told by the technical experts that when these bombs are...
Oh, no.
She's gone. The ship's disappeared. Nothing but smoke and...
Another one, I see.
That explosion you heard... That explosion you heard, the first one... was the destroyer Kavort. She's entirely disappeared. The second explosion was the frigate Redwood.
She's
gone too. Redwood carried one of the atomic bombs, but it didn't go off. It's designed to operate by water pressure at 5 miles depth. The remaining ships are dispersing at full speed. Get away from the danger area. We do have a few minutes to get clear. I don't know how long. Nobody here can say. Every ship's using every ounce of power to get away from the atomic bomb before it goes off.
Anybody here know how long it takes
to take
5 miles?
Help!
It's
slow. They're going flat out. Deck shuddering under us. Maybe we'll make it. Maybe. Faster now. Faster.
Come on.
And I now, since the Redwood tank must be beyond the main spout area by now.
Good.
Let's have a chance. Everybody looking astern. Watching. Waiting for it. All this time, that bomb's been sinking. Sinking. Nothing's happened yet. Must be getting clear of the worst now. We must have a chance. Yes, I do think we've really got a chance now. There is a lighting cigarette. Some of the hands are a bit shaky, but I can sense the tension easing.
It's gone.
Oh, no.
Poor old Derek. His wife had a baby only last month.
This one's going to take a lot of explaining away. Some publicity gesture, eh, Freddy?
Any minute now, all hell will break loose. Telephones will start jangling and people will be demanding to know.
You're late, Phil. I ordered a sherry for you.
Oh, Mike, you ought to see Oxford Street. Talk about panic buying. Everything's gone completely mad since the government suddenly introduced rationing for essential goods and services. But most food prices have doubled already. I don't know where it's likely to end.
Well, let's enjoy our meal before this place changes its menu prices. Stanley Roberts says the bottom's dropped out of the shipping market and the airlines have had to apply priority schedules.
Think of all the stranded tourists who've canceled their sea passages.
Oh, by the way, Freddy says Derek Cook will be back on the job soon.
Oh, good.
A bit radioactive, but 5 of the 10 ships made it back safely.
Oh, did you get the press tickets for tomorrow's International Naval Conference in Westminster?
Well, there aren't any for the conference proper. There'll be a public statement afterwards.
Aren't any? What do you think they're doing?
Force of habit, I imagine. When you plan an offensive campaign, you tell the press as much as it's good for it to know later on.
Oh, it's absolutely silly. More like Russia every day. Well, there must be someone I could talk to.
Whatever VIP you think of will be out to lunch now.
Hmm. I've got it. Dr. Mattey. He'll be attending the naval conference.
So?
Darling, you've invited Dr. Mattey to dine with us at your club tomorrow evening.
I've never spoken to the gentleman.
Don't worry, I'll telephone and fix it. Now, I think I'll order one of the cheese soufflés and then...
I realize that the service makes its own rules, Mr. Watson. But as no pledges were required from the rest of us attending the conference, well, I choose to regard myself at liberty to discuss the proceedings. You heard the official pronouncement, of course.
Has anything conclusive been turned up as to what caused big ships like the Queen Anne to sink so suddenly?
Well, this is only a theory, but it seems plausible. Mm-hmm. The weapon used appears to be of a vibratory type and capable of setting up sympathetic vibrations of such intensity in the attack vessel that she literally shakes herself to pieces in a minute or two. Another weapon is assumed to be some contrivance which attacks the hull below the waterline. An instrument that is capable of slicing the bottom clean off a ship.
Does Dr. Bocker go along with the weapons theory?
He does indeed, Mrs. Watson. But even he could not suggest how such a device could be made to slice through the hull of a large ship with the efficiency of a wire through cheese.
Well, what's the next move, Dr. Matte?
Well, the important thing at the moment is to get across to the public that the danger is not incomprehensible and to stop this silly panicking. I gather your job is to help cool people off, so that's why I decided.
Well, gentlemen, as you know, at yesterday's session, a general agreement was reached that a torpedo-like weapon designed to give submerged escort to a vessel could profitably be developed to counter the assumed mine form of attack. A motion was accordingly put that all nations represented at this international naval conference should pool information likely to help in the rapid development of such a weapon. However, an objection has been registered with the presiding council by the technical committee from the USSR. The spokesman for the Russian delegation has been accorded time to address today's session on this point. Please proceed, Mr. Andreev.
On behalf of the peoples of the USSR, I must state frankly that I doubt whether, if the West happened to possess a means of controlling a submerged missile by radio signals not subject to electronic or other interference, they would care to share such knowledge with the Soviet people even at this time.
Mr. Antreyev, since the Western Alliance called this conference for the purpose of cooperation, I feel duty-bound to state that the West has indeed perfected such a means of control.
Mr. Chairman, if we can believe such a claim to be true, we will also be compelled to assume that it could only have come about through the theft of the work of Soviet scientists by capitalist hirelings. The delegation of the USSR is left with no alternative but to withdraw.
The presiding council acknowledges that the Soviet delegation has exercised the privileges of withdrawal. As a follow-up to yesterday's report, please note that experiments with counter-vibrations...
While the deputy supervisor of the Naval Research Committee wouldn't permit any press people to attend the test of the counter-devices, Lieutenant Royd here was responsible for making a record of what happened. That's why I asked you and Phyllis to come over as quickly as you could. Bill Royd and I were school chums, so whatever he tells you is off the record.
Well, we have a sort of anti-vibration gadget that is a bit wearing at first. It sets up a constant hum which you can half feel, half hear. The other gimmick we tested is a tin fish you sling overboard. A dolphin, they're calling it. It promptly makes a way forward and then settles down to travel about 300 feet ahead of the ship at about 5 fathoms. Oh, it's under control, of course, but when it spots anything, it flashes a signal on a screen and goes for it automatically.
Lieutenant, do you think the dolphins are likely to be successful counter-weapons?
The combination of the anti-vibration gadget and the dolphin seems to do the trick all right. Of course, it'll cost a pretty penny to outfit all the ships afloat, plus the cost of replacing dolphins to blow up.
There you go again, Mike.
What did you say?
Falling asleep on the sofa with a lighted cigarette.
I wasn't sleeping, I was just thinking.
If I wasn't here, you'd have set the place afire.
Nearly time for the Prime Minister's statement to the nation.
Well, if it's what I think it's going to be, that will put you to sleep.
This is the English Broadcasting Company. The time is now 10:30, and we bring you an important message from the Prime Minister.
Good evening. I know that many of you have been beset by anxiety about the unusual problems that we have had to contend with. Your government and the services have made valiant efforts to produce effective countermeasures. During the past 6 months, progress in defensive gear has been such that tonight I can speak to you optimistically. My friends and fellow citizens, the battle of the deeps has been won. Our ships are able once more to ply upon their usual courses. But these menaces that have caused such grievous losses along our vital sea lanes, these menaces still remain, of course. We cannot afford, therefore, any slackening of effort in combating them. We must use all our capabilities to find out everything we can about this peril. Then we shall launch a mighty assault upon this pestilence, so that with its utter destruction, our ship shall be free to sail upon the high seas of the world. So I say to you, be of good spirit. Men of courage and determination have dedicated.
So, if you take all the aspects into account, that's how matters seem to shape up now, Dr. Barker.
Yes, what I heard today was that the 11th ship had been sunk this week.
There's been one more, only an hour ago in the Caribbean.
What do they have to say now about the operation of their defensive gear?
Apparently the Dolphins operated successfully. But the anti-vibration gear, for some reason, failed to prevent the ship shaking to pieces under their feet.
But that's not what we came to see you about.
No? Well, how can I help you?
It concerns an unusual report from April Island, south of the Sunda Strait in Indonesia.
Yes.
We'd like your opinion of it.
Fire away.
Well, it seems that a small gunboat had set out to capture a band of smugglers reported hiding in a remote coastal village. A surprise approach was made at night, and an advance landing party went ashore armed with automatic rifles and grenades. When firing broke out, followed by two loud explosions, the gunboat commander switched on his searchlight and moved in toward shore. No figures were visible among the huts. The only signs of the advanced landing party were several submachine guns lying on the sand, close to the water's edge. At daylight, the first officer and five armed men went ashore. The beach itself was scored in four places by broad furrows leading from the water's edge toward the huts.
Furrows?
The furrows were over 8 feet wide and curved in section, as if a large boiler had been dragged across the foreshore. The officer noted that the abandoned weapons and the ground, the huts of the village and the surrounding trees all had a thin coating of slime which glistened oddly.
Well,
the ground about the huts also was littered with small metal fragments, most of them curved, all of them shining with the slime. No one, alive or dead, was in the village, and the slime was beginning to stink in the hot sun. Photographs were taken of the furrows on the beach, and samples of the slime and metal fragments were collected.
Good.
And the gunboat then made a landing in another bay on April Island. At first, the village appeared deserted. The gunboat's siren finally attracted half a dozen obviously terrified natives who'd been hiding up on a hill. But they refused to visit the gunboat, insisting that the sea wasn't safe.
Yes. Did they say why it wasn't safe?
They claimed that several of the shore villages had been attacked.
What by?
They said whales.
Whales?
That's as much as the first officer could make out. Whales and giant jellyfish.
Fantastic, isn't it? Mike, show Dr. Barker the sample of the metal fragment.
Yes, it's
queer stuff, all right.
It sounds like lead, yet it weighs like feathers. Seems to be some unusual kind of alloy.
What intrigues me is that smelly slime sprayed on everything.
Yes. It poses three questions. How? What? Why?
Apparently something came out of the sea.
Several things, in fact.
Yes, quite heavy things, judging by the broad furrows they made on the beach. Yes, well, it would seem that the slime might be some sort of weapon which is sprayed when the giant whales or jellyfish or whatsits are attacked.
My impression is that somehow or other the gunboat sailors, along with the native villagers, were carried off by whatever it is that came out of the sea.
Yes, I'm inclined to agree. What's beginning to worry me now is that we can probably anticipate an increasing number of these raids.
With unsuspecting people being dragged out of their beds and into the sea.
Yes, I'm afraid so. Yes, this is a very serious development. Something must be done immediately before panic spreads. We shall have to act very quickly to avert a worldwide disaster. Battle of the Deeps has only just begun.
From Vancouver, you have heard Episode 3 of The Kraken Wakes, a serial adapted by Eric Cameron from the novel by John Wyndham. The following actors were featured in this episode: Sam Payne, Shirley Broderick, Michael Irwin, Greg Barnes, Derek Ralston, Roy Brinson, John White, Jack Ammon, Ivor Harries, Peter Brockington, Otto Lowy, and Roland Hunter. Sound effects, Lars Eastholm. The play was directed by Norman Newton in the Vancouver studios of the CBC, with technical operation by Ian Stevens.